that lass on Radio 4 who's sort of Charlotte Gray. She's got nothing on me.
Do you look into their eyes, Ian, or is that too personal a question? You don't want to go into this.
What would you be shouting at the television screen, Ian Lennox?
I can't proofread that.
But there is a slight suggestion that next season might be better. So.
Let's hope so.
No one seems to get a panic of pulling shirts nowadays, or hardly ever.
Or Seven Simple Seasons.
Yes, like it.
Fly Me to the Moon, the audio podcast companion with Rob Nichols.
Personally, I'm looking forward to, I think, 7-0 against Hull City and then 4-0 against Barnsley, really, so we can echo the football of the international side, really,
yeah.
By the way, which is great. Number 600, Rob Nichols.
Indeed.
Number 600.
Big number, isn't it?
Unbelievable. The 600th Fly Me to the Moon print and magazine,
yes.
Absolutely amazing in so many ways, and a somewhat raunchy cover, it has to be said, which many people would actually say, I remember when those used to be smuggled into school, but obviously different landings. Now, the joy of six, the joy of 600. We'll find out about 600 things as the programme proceeds, because it'll be an extra bonus edition, of course, of Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast companion for the awesome magazine that's actually there. And of course, we do have the line that we can say now that Maurizio Pochettino is available, should we need to possibly look some way.
Yeah.
In terms of general decisions about new managers to appoint, I thought, interesting.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming. Obviously, a lot of people had tipped that he might leave Spurs rather than the other way around. Mm. And then Mourinho was very hastily...
Maureen is back with his pyjamas,
his
wonderful sort of sleeping in the huge pillows, etc., yeah. And his complete passion for Chelsea. He's lost that.
He's a club man, isn't he?
He is, exactly. Yes. He is a club man.
Whichever club he be at.
That's very true. We'll see what happens with respect to that, because more seriously, we look at the tables and it's... Obviously, as we're in the month of November, we can only cheer this up by saying, it's Yorkshire Derby Week! Yay!
Yeah. Are we a Yorkshire club?
Well, this is the critical thing, but we certainly have got three Yorkshire sides, which, again... no, I'm not even going to say it, but I mean, nine points would obviously be ideal. But two home games which are fairly critical in terms of our own position.
Yeah.
If we look at the sort of current table, Borough, 13 points from 16 games.
Yeah.
So two wins and we'll be back to an average of a point a game, which I think is not great, but at least it gives us a fighting chance of working through that process.
And it would double the amount of wins we've had this season, because that's the big factor, isn't it, that we've... simply not won enough games. Two games out of almost a third of the season is a really poor return.
Obviously, Britta Sambalonga, who managed to grab a brace of goals.
Well-taken goals.
Against QPR, which I think was unexpected after a fashion. But was the QPR overall performance a lot better than you'd anticipated?
It was. We got at them from the very start, and then we had a goal disallowed for offside in the first 5 minutes, and you thought, oh no, here we go again. Because... obviously, Jonathan Woodgate has been criticised by many for saying the table lies, etc. And there's a few people have taken issue with that in the fanzine, because the table clearly can't lie. But it is fair to say that we've had our fair share of bad luck in games, and you thought at that point it's going to happen again.
Yep.
But we twice came back in that game through Britta Sambalonga, and I think we certainly deserved a draw, but probably deserved a win. And I think those two goals, it was good that they came to him first of all, but obviously the team had gone four games without scoring and not looked like scoring.
Yeah, as we said, Ashley Fletcher having his own nightmare and challenges within that. We look at Middlesbrough 0, Fulham 0, Huddersfield 0, Middlesbrough 0. These are kind of games that, and of course, Derby 2, Middlesbrough 0 as well for that aspect. So really looking concerning from that point of view. And with a third of the season gone, clearly we're now, I mean, just looking at the side, something of the order of 15 points away from position number six.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of areas where I think, okay, fine, let's just concentrate on literally one game at a time and work through that. Because the other thing, spectre at the feast, I appreciate this, is after the new year, usually Borough's form is not great. So
So, we've got to reverse that, haven't we?
I think that clearly has got to be Woodgate's sort of mission from that point of view. Do you feel as though there is a sense of optimism that actually things are going through, or is it a case of, as indeed maybe being suggested by some of the contributors to Fly Me to the Moon, that maybe he's out of his depth?
I thought the performance at QPR was a little bit along the lines of what we saw at Luton in the first game of the season. Mm. It was more a kind of case of what we thought we were going to get at the start of the season, where we were harrying teams and forcing them into errors. If you look at the second goal by Sumbalonga, it's come from constantly getting onto the defence. Mm. And that mistake almost happened two or three times, and finally it did, and he found the finish because that's essential, isn't it? So hopefully we've got a chance in the next two home games to show that that isn't a flash in the pan, to show that we can get at teams and get ahead, and obviously be quite critical to get a win again, well, having only had two wins.
Now that Michael Hughes has taken over the reins at Stoke, you have to possibly say that they may well be showing an increase in form, just as Huddersfield did with the Cowleys. Luton, you mentioned, of course, just 1 point ahead of Borough and 14 points, etc. Which, I suppose, leaves you with Barnsley, and again, that's
a massive game, isn't it?
Exactly. Those are the kind of things where...
And they've obviously changed their manager very recently, somewhat controversially, you would say. Mm. Obviously, you do get that bounce with a new manager quite often, but it doesn't necessarily sustain itself. Stoke have got a phenomenal team when you look at it, and you think it's not actually the team that was relegated. They're a team of like proven players at Championship or Premier League level, and you feel that surely they're going to click eventually. But not necessarily.
Well, again, it opens up a whole range of things. So let's talk about the Yorkshire sort of series.
Yes.
We'll have a look at some of the contributors, because obviously we've got memories are made of this. 600 episodes. 600 episodes of the paper magazine. I have lost count in terms of the podcast, to be absolutely honest. I think we've been part of the whole thing for the last 7 or 8 years, I think.
Yeah, we've been in it for a while.
Yeah, we have indeed. Maybe we should assist them.
Too many to count, obviously.
But you can all find, you can still find them. You can actually go back. They're still all online. Southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com.
Right,
I appreciate that. Doesn't necessarily connect with respect to the fabulous other.
Well, we can't number them, can we? Because it gets too confusing.
Well, we started off by basically saying that it was the podcast companion issue.
Yeah, exactly.
But since we've also started doing podcasts for editions, in betweenies, that's what, I suppose, if we were sufficiently obsessed with the whole thing,
we need a statistician to come in.
Yeah, we do. We need a stato. If you actually know of any statisticians who would like to actually come through and sort that whole thing,
specialise in podcasts, perhaps.
Precisely. It's definitely the way forward from that line.
Yeah, well, we're playing, obviously, first up, Hull, and Hull...
22 points.
Yeah.
Classic mid-table mediocrity.
But if you look at, if you break down their results, they've had some very good results away from home. Hammered Fulham, 3-0. Mm. I remember Jonathan Woodgate saying that, for him, Fulham were his favourites to go up. And there were a lot of people's favourites. Mm. And then they've had some really poor results.
Again, Fulham sitting in seventh position now, 26 points from that line. I mean, it is actually interesting. As we just look at the thing, we've got West Brom, Preston, Leeds, Swansea, Nottingham Forest, Bristol. And then just outside, Fulham, Gary Monk, Sheffield Wednesday.
Mm.
And then you're into Brentford, QPR, who possibly again... on the back of the result against the Borough, maybe be into a certain amount of slippage. Of course, this very evening we've got a game that takes, I think it's QPR and Fulham QPR. If you're listening to it on Friday, in terms of the way as we get back after the international break.
I think it's very interesting that the financial fair play seems to have really evened out the division. It's always been notorious, the Championship, that anyone could beat everyone else, but not to this extent, I don't think.
No,
you've got a batch of clubs that maybe. Have arguably bent the rules. And of course, you mentioned Sheffield Wednesday.
Who, of course, are in deep doo-doo potentially over the selling of their ground.
Yeah.
And
clearly.
Maybe it's the Gary Monk effect.
Yeah.
And only kidding,
selling
Gary.
The ground and putting the money into the wrong year's accounts or whatever. Mm. But clearly, for me, clearly that rule should not have been changed by the EFL. The clubs should not be able to sell their grounds, because the whole point of financial fair play was to make sure that clubs didn't end up like Bolton or, indeed, even worse, like Bury. And this, being able to sell your assets, in this way surely is storing up problems for the future, potentially.
We're in the midst, obviously, of, in case you haven't realised it, a general election. Don't worry, we're not going to talk about it, the election-free zone. But you are talking about how do you actually balance the books, how do you work through that process. There are lots of sort of issues regarding that in all sorts of ways. Probably the Liberal Democrats actually sort of making more sense at this particular stage. But, yeah, actually, in terms of simple economics, to do the sort of things that are being done can only, in many cases, result in Bury, Bolton, equivalent, etc.
Because you've got
Coventry. Coventry is still, you know, they're still not at the Ricoh Arena. No. They're having to share their ground with Birmingham City.
Yeah.
And clearly that can't be a good experience for the fans in any way, shape, or
and
form.
And that is a scenario that's been going on for absolutely years.
Yeah.
No.
And those of us who are slightly more mature, like, dare I say it, the two of us, Rob, can remember the time when Coventry City were a staple of the what used to be the Premiership, well, what used to be First Division and was now the Premiership.
Yeah, they were famous for not having been relegated since the 60s or something like that. Right.
And since Jimmy Hill, the Chin, effectively, worked on the Anyway, we could wax on that basis. The critical thing is, obviously, there needs to be a performance which kind of can inspire, because it is, and again, cliche coming up now, fixtures coming up thick and fast.
It's true. And we obviously have got such a small squad that that was the other thing about QPR game. Remember going into that game, we thought there was about five or six players that were out. And then going into the out of the rain, into the seats, suddenly, but to see two at the straight away, Darren Randolph and Ainsley Pears coming out. So not only were both big doubts for the game. In fact, nobody thought Randolph was playing. And then George Friend to come behind, again, who came from nowhere. And then Ashley Fletcher also declaring himself fit. And it made a massive difference, George Friend coming back to the defence. Not just the way he played, but the way that he captained the team at the back and marshalled it. It was a really big plus point. And of course, Darren Randolph, you've got the best keeper in the league then.
Certainly opens up the line and is a Hull. A midday kickoff, of course.
I know.
Not really, again, we'd have to look at statistics to actually see where middays
on
are.
On a Sunday.
Exactly,
so
yes.
It could be quite quiet, because that often happens. And Hull, of course, have got like a really good informed striker, haven't they, in Jared Bowen, who's got double figures for the season. And that makes a big difference when you've got somebody who can stick the ball in the net.
And certainly talking about peculiarities, because Borough's so used to Tuesday night games.
Yeah.
It's a Wednesday. I know, I suppose you can understand it. If you're playing on Sunday, you don't really want to go Sunday to Tuesday because that becomes ridiculous. But then, of course, we have that Barnsley game on the 27th of November, followed pretty rapidly, of course, by the traditional 3 o'clock Saturday game against those lads from Elland Road.
It's a long time since... somebody might tell me I'm wrong, but that it's very rare that we play a 3 o'clock Saturday kickoff against Leeds. It's always moved one way or the other
because of television and so on. Leeds, of course, there or thereabouts. I think many people were expecting them to be a lot more. Towards the top of the thing.
They would pull away with the season, since they kept the manager and they kept the majority of the squad, and in some respects maybe were strengthened it.
And I suspect nobody expected them to have the same number of points as Preston, i.e. 31.
Well, you know, Preston have been building in the last couple of years, and they're a good sort of model for where Middlesbrough and other clubs could be at, and maybe going in the mould of something like something like Sheffield United and Norwich from last season. But of course, Stoke tried to swipe their manager Alex Neil, and why would he? Why would he go from
they probably have had more luck with Mourinho, actually. Back to Jose again. Very, very strange from that. As I said, in many ways, I think maybe Mourinho is the new Sam Allardyce. maybe that's the way forward. A club man from that point of view.
Sam Allardyce?
Well, there we are. So, still to come, we'll be looking more in detail at the magazine. We've got a variety of other bits and pieces. So it is 600 editions of Fly Me to the Moon that surround all this and more coming up after this.
Hey, celebrate and rejoice. It's Rob Nichols and friends on Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast. Not to be confused with Fly Me to the Moon, the song. Or the fragrance for men.
100 strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium, 245
grams of magnesium, 1 tablespoon.
Remember, any more than 1 tablespoon could kill you. Any less than 1 tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was
and
the recipe?
That's the recipe.
Oh,
if
damn.
You would like a more simple solution,
oh,
then
right.
You can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondents from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialise in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit manilapr.com now.
Hi, this is Bernie Slaven, and you're listening to Rob Nichols on Flying at the Moon.
Thank you, Bernie.
Yes, so here we are. I don't think anyone really expected us to be in this position at this point of the season. Let's just hope the appointment of Woody is not another mistake, and that starting today we get ourselves out of our current plight, not my words, but...
Might help if I switch the microphone on there. You know, it's just there was I, so looking at various other bits and pieces, I think, oh, it's okay. You probably heard this sort of voice just rolling in the background as though I was actually in Afghanistan. You know, okay, never mind. Yeah, so here we are. I don't think anyone really expects us to be in this position at this point of the season. And Stanistan goes on to talk about the notion that he hopes the appointment of Woody is not another mistake, and that starting against Hull City, we get ourselves out of our current plight. A couple of wins and a bit of confidence, and then we can start edging our way out of trouble. Yeah, and he makes that point. However, it needs to start now, as we know how good we usually are after Christmas. I know it's the spectre at the feast, but it's kind of, it's almost in the tradition. It's rather like Arsene Wenger's traditional spring slump, effectively.
I remember I saw Kroenke used to get really annoyed about it, didn't he? When people, and actually his record wasn't too bad after Christmas.
No,
but I think another thing to underline that is that if people are waiting and hoping on movement in the transfer market in January, whether it happens or not, there's too many games before that window opens. And
I mean, if you get into slippage at this particular area, you're looking
And obviously that's another problem as well, that we have several senior players out of contract at the end of the season, and whether any of them might be whether there might be movement outwards in January.
Is it a fair point to say that Steve Gibson might feel a little bit under pressure?
I think he will. Obviously, he's so experienced. He's been
there
so long.
I mean, allowing for the fact that the likelihood is, had it not been for the fact that maybe the decision to dispense with Gareth Southgate and obviously Gary Monk, etc., might come back to haunt, that's maybe one of the reasons why he's a little bit reluctant to hire and fire in terms of the sort of sequence there. And obviously, we had Tony Mowbray as well from that sort of area.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I take your point in hiring and firing in the first 6 months of a season. It hasn't it hasn't worked.
It's been problematic. I mean, maybe we're still looking back to the days of Gordon Wee Strachan, basically, in terms of that sort of debacle where there were problems caused from that sort of issue.
You could say that maybe Tony Mowbray saved us from relegation in his season, and that is the only factor here that. Obviously, we cannot risk going down the third flight because that is a difficult situation. And then we would join Sunderland.
Yes. Let's hope it's not the opposite sort of scenario, but still we see how things operate. In the United States, a credit score of 600 or below is considered a poor score, thus limiting available credit. 600 is the advertised number of miles that NASCAR runs in the Coca-Cola 600. I just thought I'd find some random facts about 600 here. I'm sure it was the 300 that was the animated scenario from that line. It is actually the number following 599 and preceding 601. This is why we don't trust Wikipedia, you know? I mean, I think, well, really? Yeah. You know, 600, the natural number following 599 and preceding 601. Rob, you've pretty much been with it for the majority, if not all. I mean, not necessarily the editor-in-chief for all that time, but the bulk, certainly, of those 600 issues. What are your own memories?
Well,
the Premiership, presumably.
and
the excitement of that. Because,
I remember that, those first two seasons under Brian Robson. And remember, for instance, going to a Riverside Stadium and actually wondering where it was. I'd been there, visiting it as being built, but the road system was being changed. So remember getting printing out a map from the Gazette to see where we could stand to sell fanzines around the ground, things like that. Yeah. And then remembering the second season when we were going in a league, obviously falling, and in the League Cup and the FA Cup. And it almost seemed like you were saying about games coming thick and fast. Well, there was fanzines thick and fast because in those days we did a fanzine for every game.
Exactly.
And some games were called off. We went away to Stockport County in the semi-final of the League Cup and it was rained off. And then everything got scrambled up. Where were games going to be played? And it was like there was 1 week. I've mentioned it before, but there was 1 week where we were sort of working one night all the way through for 24 hours, going to sleep the next night, then doing it 24 hours again. Because in those days, you had to type a lot of stuff.
Pre-desktop publishing and computers and all the fun we actually have with those. But you're absolutely right. And of course, the voice of the fans, very much a reaction, I think, against the notion that in those days, and we're talking very much pre the kind of oil money or international ownership or the mega premiership that came through.
It's Jack Walker, I suppose.
And
a lot of people were very much against Jack Walker, saying that he was buying success for his local club. And of course, people...
Never have, I mean, Man City would never do that these days. It's just, it would never occur. Anyway,
but you remember that? I mean, and then that was the last club to do that before, last provincial club to do it before Leicester, of course, recently, which was very important that Leicester did it. And then a lot of people were very much against Middlesbrough for the same thing.
Why should we take Juninho
and Ravinelli?
It was a sort of an interesting time, but certainly halcyon days. A quote from Neil Garrett here, is it really that long ago when the very act of fans producing a document comprised of their own thoughts and opinions was akin to advocating Marxist revolution at a Tory party conference? Spirit of FMTTM, famously captured in Teesside Urban Legends, the definitive collection of selected contributions to the online message board. Some events still remain a bone of contention, such as, did Terry Scott really accidentally drive his car in the 70s off the transporter and into the tees? And was Alex Higgins living above the Dickens Inn for a while whilst bumming pints around borough pubs?
Yes, well, I think there's pictorial evidence for support of them, the two of them.
You can fake images, of course, Rob, but...
You couldn't as easily in those days. Although, I suppose the Stalin did that. But
and he rightly says it's a credit to Rob and the lads that the fanzine has gone through many incarnations as is written into Borough folklore. Many other league clubs and non-league have seen fanzines come and go, which is absolutely right. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think because of the internet, some might say, great, you know, the voice of the fans has often moved online into, some might also say, less sophisticated fora.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really quite depressing when you look at the Have You Say comments on even the BBC websites. You see the level of trolling and borderline abuse that sort of comes through.
And I suppose that what Neil Garrett's pointing to there, that urban legends thread was sort of a bit of almost like a halcyon day of message boards, but when people actually used to interact in that way, and now it could be quite bitter.
There's also the argument that some of the fun elements has kind of become. I mean, there are attempts, obviously. Amazon have actually started the back of the net sort of thing with Peter Crouch and Gabby Roslin that are sort of there. And there are various other sort of things
right.
that have sort of attempts to work through that. Amazon, of course, will be getting very much involved in their own screenings of Premiership football in the near future. But there is that sort of sense that, yeah, the humour, which is a critical part of the football fans' experience, sometimes gets a bit sort of lost in various ways. People get a little bit concerned. I mean, it's a different line for that area.
And we're talking about sort of halcyon days in the mid-90s, but actually the club was on a knife edge. And we had those two seasons in the Premier League initially when everything seemed possible, but in the end everything was impossible because we got the tears of the relegation, didn't we, and the defeats in the cup finals. So it was I don't know how social media, if it had been around then, how that would have been, how it would have embraced that, because that was a time of incredible tension. And I don't think it would have, I think there'd be meltdown on message boards, wouldn't there, and meltdown on Facebook.
One of the interesting events which I was present at, actually, is written by Paddy Dillon. And there wasn't a Fly Me to the Moon fanzine accompanying this, although I think there should have been, actually, in retrospect, especially now that the Killers are actually booked to actually appear at the Riverside. But, of course, it was Sunday, the 21st of March 2000, when there were 22,000 of us who actually, 22,000 spectators from the Diocese of Middlesbrough on the BT Cellnet Stadium, as it was referred to, celebrating the 2000th birthday of Christ, obviously, from that point of view, but the 2000th millennium celebration with the sacrifice of the Mass at the Borough, from that point of view. As Paddy goes on to say, you'd be forgiven for thinking staging a massive Mass must have earned Borough a bit of divine intervention at the Riverside the following season. Still slid hopelessly towards relegation and looked doomed in December. But salvation was indeed on the way with the second coming of the Messiah, the one and only Terry Eltel Venables.
Oh, yes.
I suppose he's still around. Maybe he might have actually sort of eased away from that sort of point of view. But that was interesting because that was the first time I'd actually attended the Riverside, not maybe in a sense from that point of view. Lots of sort of areas that were developed within that whole. Certainly Bernie Slaven, I think, would have appreciated that.
Yeah.
Lots of lines from Chris Bartley, Mike Baker, Stu Mack, Thomas Bartley, Paddy Dillon again, Stanley Stan about their first ever Borough Games. Again, I think we talked about this, but again, pre-Fly Me to the Moon, mine was a 0-0 draw against Chelsea in the First Division, 1974.
Charlie Cook
and Ian Hutchison.
Might have hit the bar.
He did, yes.
At the Bob End, where I was sitting.
And then, obviously, from my own point of view, the somewhat upsetting 3-0 defeat by Middlesbrough for Manchester City with Rodney Marsh and company in line there, and Middlesbrough 3. And actually, 3-0 was a very popular scoreline under Jack Charlton. I mean, there were a lot of sort of games that were 3-0.
I think people forget that. They just think it's 1-0, but there was a lot of 3-0s.
A lot of 3-0s.
Right.
And I think I seem to well recall a Coventry City game, which was 4-all. Long before. Long before John Neal started coming in and thrashing Chelsea 7-2, which was also a very positive game from that point of view.
But I love some of these memories because people go into sort of detail about it. Chris Bartley says, I can still remember the excitement of the 263 pulling up in Linthorpe Village and seeing the most amazing cosmic floodlights. Two things that you can't get on a 263 from Normanby or whatever, and you won't see floodlights anymore. But Mike Baker's is interesting because he says he'd like to have talked about his first match, but he actually hated it, didn't he?
It's very true. The only thing he can recall is eating a match pie and wondering when the jelly finished and the meat began.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting that, because people think, and I was going, it totally changed the way I was going to present this, because I was thinking it's the first game, it's where you fell in love with the borough. But as Mike says, not everyone does. Some people absolutely hate it, and it almost puts them off. Mm. So it's a good reminder of that. And it's got quite like nice mix of first memories from Ayrshire and Riverside and...
Yeah. I mean, Gary Brogdon, of course, wouldn't tell us about his first Borough game, but will tell us about his second, a 0-0 home draw against Sunderland, a dreadful, awful game in terrible conditions, and the vision of hell was only completed when the 20 or so Mackems in the away end set fire to the rubbish on the terracing. As the two teams clogged each other on the pitch, basking in the glory of the glow of the flames, I thought, I'm home. it is sort of one of those areas. I think, again, back to the Ayrshire Park sort of scenario, which there was one game, which again it was against West Ham, and I think Borough won 3-0 again, and the phenomenal sound of the stamping of the feet on the wooden,
I've mentioned that actually, because that's what I remember, the stamping of the feet.
Yeah.
I remember people, If you were in wintertime, people had great big coats.
Season ticket was in the Warwick Street end. So that was the way we went into that sort of thing.
So the old North Stand, the old main stand, Warwick Street.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
That so you would have gone through the Ayrshire gates that are now at the Riverside.
That's very true. Yeah. So it goes.
And yet, did you remember the piped? I always remember the smell of piped tobacco and
you mentioned that before. I'm not sure. Well, yeah, it's maybe
I remember in the North and the South Stand there was quite a lot of people. Well, didn't take too many people to smoke a pipe before you could smell it.
Always used to bring a flask of a hot drink for half time.
Yeah.
So it was very critical from that sort of point of view. Okay, we'll be talking more about the 600, obviously, in other areas, but other Middlesbrough memories that we've actually got in terms of Matt Smith writing about night matches at Ayrshire Park to a 9-year-old night matches at Ayrshire Park. A spellbinding experience. The walk to the ground alone was an otherworldly trek through the grid of tourists, two up-toe downs. A maze of illuminated windows through which people could be observed, sat tucking into the tea in front of curry, whilst we hardy supporters marched onward towards our hallowed lush green oasis. Interesting times indeed. Enough of such stuff. We will actually be having a little piece of poetry from Jimmy Flynn. Shall we do half of this? We'll do half of this now and then half of it for our next sort of Fly Me to the Moon sort of thing. So I think if we look to wrap up with "And bore little resemblance to the game of today," which will be the sort of final thing which we'll get there from that. And we'll leave a sort of a horns of a cleft stick. It's entitled "Soccer Snapshots in Time from Days Gone By." And I think we'll do a sort of two-hander again. We'll start off with "When up the Borough was the cry, football as it used to be."
Now, sadly, a fading memory. When Ayrshire Park was chock-a-block.
An hour before kick-off time of 3 o'clock, with fans counting down time on the North Stand clock.
When thousands stood on terraces in the open air, exposed to the elements but didn't care.
Seemingly impervious to snow, wind and rain, each returning to their favoured spot again and again.
When times were hard and life was bleak, and for many, football was the highlight of the week.
When no matter how grey the day, football banished the blues and took cares away.
When meat pies and Bovril was the favoured fare. And tobacco smoke hung heavy in the air.
When camaraderie and humour was the order of the day, and crowd disturbances and violence was light years away.
When facilities were primitive and did sadly reflect the way clubs failed to afford fans due respect.
When football was played in a different way and bore little resemblance to the game of today. I always feel as though Jimmy Flynn gets our rhythm, Rob. You know, it's always that he writes for us. You know,
yes.
I feel that actually you should have a sort of a subset of Shrug and in your next album, your third album, just have some poetic sort of things written by Jimmy Flynn. I think that would work.
Well, he has been listening to the podcast, so perhaps he's influenced
there we are, Jimmy,
by
exactly. He senses the way that, that works together. And returning again briefly to the sort of line of where we're actually going, Chris Bartley, it's been 1,704 hours and 71 days since Middlesbrough won, before, of course, Hull City. 1,704 hours and 71 days since,
That's we need Chris on the case as to how many podcasts we've done.
Exactly. Two home games in 4 days, he writes, against Hull City and Barnsley provide us with an amazing chance to kickstart the season. If a team that has only won 2 in 16, that is stark.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, yeah, it's looking at the table, a goal difference of minus eight, points 13, played 16. If we looked at the full championship table, that's the sort of thing where, yeah.
Yeah, I think we said at the very start, that's where we need to start winning games. Mm-hmm. Draws are not good enough, and a win against Hull and a win against Barnsley as well would be absolutely phenomenal. Mm.
And would give us at least a fighting chance of working through. I mean, yeah. Certainly it would, to use the Churchillian sort of line, not be the end. It wouldn't even the beginning of the end, but it would be the end of the beginning, working our way through that line of things there. And yes, I mean, we see three draws and two losses in the last sort of sequence there. And Luton, Wigan, Stoke City, of course, two wins at that point. Basically, Barnes, they've had three draws. A frightening thing, of course, if Barnsley had converted those draws into wins, we would have been in even more dire straits.
Yeah.
But anyway.
How many draws have we had, though?
Three. Yeah. Same number as Barnsley.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And we would say the same. I mean, some of those draws. But obviously, that something that people have got in the back of their memories or the front of their memories is that last game where we were playing against, last game at the Riverside, where we drew 0-0, where we were playing against 10 men. For nearly the whole game, really, and the keeper had been sent off, and then we hardly had a shot in target, and that was, we even had some free kicks in front of goal and blazed them over the bar. So that was quite poor, really, and it was good to see that reaction against QPR, where we were actually getting shots on target and where we were actually converting them as well.
It's critical. We haven't mentioned Red Army Radio. We should do that because people might be listening to us via Red Army Radio. So hello, Red Army Radio listeners, which of course is radio on omai.com, Red Army Radio. Yes. If you find us and you're listening to us via that sort of thing, then why? Maybe southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. We don't know, but still, it's all good stuff. Truth, it's hardly a difficult concept to grasp, is it? Writes Matt Smith. Either something is a fact or it is a falsehood. The problem is people lie, bend the truth, or even present opinion as fact in order to suit their own populist agendas. Surely you can't be talking about the upcoming general election. But he is actually sort of addressing quite an interesting line in terms of how untruths are actually told, etc. Actually, one thing we haven't mentioned, which I saw recently advertised, Chris Kamara's launched his new career as a singer with a Christmas album.
Yes, that's right.
That gave me quite a turn when I saw him performing on stage and sort of, you know, doing this whole sort of singer-songwriter system. I would have thought it, eh? I wonder if there are any career players who fancy doing... well, actually, isn't British Samba Longa quite a DJ?
Is he?
I seem to have sort of heard it said that he once sort of involved
he dabbled
in
there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But still. Speaking of he who must not be criticised, Matt Smith writes, Steve Gibson has been conspicuously quiet of late, leaving it to his nephew to do his usual pre-election influential millionaire tells the plebs who they should vote for routine. apparently this time we have to get behind the mayor's hand-picked independent candidate and self-proclaimed drug czar. He's getting very confused now, I think, on that basis, and wraps up with the notion the championship league table was not available for comment.
No.
I think tongue might be in cheek slightly.
Yeah, and what he's talking about is what we mentioned before about Jonathan Woodgate said about the table lies basically, he's got an argument. His whole argument is that, well, it doesn't lie.
I mean, we'd be interested to see if those dreadful letters VAR were introduced in the championship. Mm-hmm. Would that have been positive or negative? I mean, I think there have been lots of question marks about.
Yeah, we certainly fell victim to some really dubious refereeing decisions earlier in the season, and they would have not only given us a couple of wins, but that would have made such a big confidence boost for us. Things might have been different. Yeah.
Anyway, let us move on in terms of Ian Smith's very positive view. We may be troughing it right now, but we'll scale those peaks again. Maybe troughing it. Troughing?
Yeah. It's
a difficult call, really. I have to say, putting anything together right now in the borough has been pretty challenging. Sitting rather ugly in the bottom three this season to date has been nothing but a disaster. Of course, there's a transition, blah, blah, blah. I've said it all before now, but I'm not sure anyone thought we'd see this. Talk of the R word. I can't say it, Rob. It's no use. I can't say it. No. Talk of the R word to League One. Maybe a little premature, but the fact I even have to dismiss it as such tells you all isn't well down by the Riverside. Okay, how can people get hold of this awesomely wonderful issue 600 of Fly Me to the Moon?
If you go to the Fly Me to the Moon website, which is fmttm.com, and you click on the menu, fanzine shop, then I've put it for sale there that you can buy it through.
And I love the way you've actually put lots of inserts of previous editions.
Oh, you noticed.
Sprinkled, sort of little golden sort of icons throughout the entire magazine.
Yeah, little front covers.
Absolutely. You can use a magnifying glass to actually do a Sherlock Holmes scenario and work through that. That was quite a fun thing, of course, when we did our first Sherlock Holmes drama from that. We must do another one of those.
Yes, which was a spin-off from... We carried the... through a season, a mystery, didn't we? A whodunit at the riverside.
All those great scenarios which will return. And, of course, Christmas subscription to Fly Me to the Moon available. So let's talk about the gift that we'll keep on giving no matter where in the world you happen to be.
Yeah, indeed. And it's only £14 by cheque, so it'll be about £16 by through PayPal because they charge a charge. I've just launched it in the fanzine, but I will launch it online next week. If you're listening to this after the match, then it'll be launched.
And for any overseas listeners, it is sadly just for the UK only from that point of view.
Bonus. Yeah, that's right. But I'll do a rate for the overseas because postage is quite a lot.
We don't even know where the postal service will be working on that sort of basis, but I'm sure they will. They'll sort that whole thing through.
Yeah.
As you yourself say, celebrate our longevity, remember the good, bad, and not so ugly times that have been shared since 1988. A journey that continues. We have to give a happy birthday to Miniature G.
Yes. Oh, yes. Happy birthday.
Is he just a small chap?
Miniature G Downing. No, he was a Miniature G when he was born.
Well, at least we managed to work.
He was one of the editors with me back in the early 90s.
And any little plugs for those editors? Would you like to just share some names there of the role of honour? Because they were responsible, obviously, for launching the whole thing. We talked about some of the conditions there.
Yeah. Galandi, Robbie Ball and Tony Pierre were the guys that actually started it. Then Galandi was the owner-editor for many years. And Andy and Miniature G were like early powerhouses. And then... I came in, there's been all sorts of people. Bob Fisher did the covers for many years before him. Saatchi, who's just moved to Germany, actually. He did the covers before him, and now we've got Paddy doing the covers. And then we've had so many people who've contributed for so many years. Some of them have gone on. Daniel Gray is now a published author of some repute. Anthony Vickers now writes for the Gazette. Joe Nicholson, of course, who used to sit alongside us in these podcasts, is now the Middlesbrough correspondent for the Hartlepool Mail. And there's a massive amount of people who've taken part, sold the fanzine. Got Tom and who's done it for many years, sold it, and Lee at the moment, and just very thankful to all the people. And the Bartleys, of course, we've mentioned Chris and Thomas, who's been writing since he's been what, junior school, I think. And those two, Thomas and Chris and Angela, helped put it together every issue. We put them in envelopes and we send them off. Angela puts all the types on.
Unless, of course, you go to Liam James Barber at Eaglescliff and the Good Food Joint. Other place you actually purchase it. All great stuff. Or you buy it outside the match. You said they are still sold outside the match.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll be standing outside the match with Lee and
dedication
Tom.
To the ultimate extent from that point of view. You don't get many editor chiefs to actually do that.
It'll be very early as well when we go out there on Sunday morning.
Exactly.
Oh, and can we also say for anybody who's listening to this before the game that to bring a tin along to the match, because it's a food bank. Middlesbrough Supporters Forum are organising a food bank appeal. There'll be a van parked behind the north stand at the riverside, and this is quite a critical time of the year when families can find themselves in hardship, hopefully temporary hardship, and when the winter kicks in, sometimes you've got to choose between heating and eating. So it's very important.
Yeah, huge issues with respect to that, which the family of football likes to try and alleviate to a certain extent.
Yes.
Although, as we've said before, we really should have a society in which that is not an issue. I'm not talking any political parties at all here, but it should not be an issue.
No.
And hopefully we'll make sure that is sorted out and addressed. I'm just wondering, do we do predictions? Because our next official Flying to the Moon podcast will be just ahead of the Charlton Athletic game,
right,
where we'll actually do a combination thing there from probably two different studios, actually, which is going to be quite adventurous. We'll also have the Jimmy Flynn second part of soccer snapshots in time from days gone by. But I'll say Borough 2, Hull City 1, and I'll go for Middlesbrough 4, Barnsley.
I'd throw that in there.
And then possibly 2 all against Leeds. And then we'd be quite happy, really.
That would be a phenomenal week.
Yes, we'd work our way through that process.
Yeah.
And on this little bonus thing, I see that the actual clock has now actually turned around to 45 minutes. See what it did there?
Really?
45 minutes for the actual...
First half.
Exactly. First half of the 600 has sort of opened up, and we're going well. We're off for our half-time cup of orange now, or indeed...
segment of orange.
Exactly.
And actually what we're going to go for is Bovril.
Of course. Clearly, that's the essential part. So, finally, we wrap up with those final words as the referee begins to actually bring his whistle to his lips, and we say, Come on, Borough.
Hey, celebrate and rejoice. It's Rob Nichols and friends on Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast. Not to be confused with Fly Me to the Moon, the song, or the fragrance for men.